Coming up on the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues, we've got this fallout of the Stefon Diggs trade and looking forward to the wide receiver group of the NFL Draft 2024. Let's go.
I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, it is the Red, White, and Buffalo Blues with myself, Matt, and Robin. And I think if it's the same to you, that we're kind of recording this on a good day after the news that happened about a few hours ago, and involving one, are you sure, Stefon Diggs?
Yeah, probably needed it checked in about three or four different sources before it was. He kind of pulled this gag several times before, like every single season.
We don't have Ryan Colbert here.
Check that it's the real Adam Schechter that's posting it. Check that it's actually real, and then check with a few other impeccable sources. But yeah.
Yeah, we don't have Ryan Tolbert to break it to us either.
No, we're pretty good at laying the scoops, aren't we? Like every single time we record, either someone's joining or leaving. It depends which way you want to break it down. Do we want to say a few words about what is meant for us or where it leaves the team now?
I mean, to be honest, there's a lot of people saying a lot of different stuff. How it's good, how it's bad, how it's indifferent. I mean, it depends on how your glass is.
Yes, it depends what you prioritise as well.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you start to see a trend this off season. Trey White,
yeah,
Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse. Okay, yep. Gabe Davis is an anomaly. Stefon Diggs, all 30 plus.
Changing of the guard.
Youth movement, youth revolution.
Yeah. Yep. They've all been DiCaprioed, haven't they? They've hit that certain threshold, and he's looking for someone younger and hungrier.
Yeah, and it's probably what I've said, especially with Babich. This may be Brady. Obviously, Brendan Bean had his press conference just a while ago, but maybe it's a case that we saw what we saw with this offense when Brady actually took over. Diggs's hit came down a lot.
Yep.
He focused more on tight ends and the run game.
Yeah.
But could it be a case that this is the offense that we're going to have? This is the offense which is going forward, one that is going to be interchangeable, maybe not have that one alpha, and obviously letting Josh cook best way he actually can. And we saw that he actually was starting to get more and more targets out there. And we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, it could be. You do get the sense, don't you, that Kincaid certainly came to the fore once Brady came in. And like you say, it was a sort of shorter passing game, a lot more run game with James Cook behind a very good offensive line. You've got James Cook still catching as well. You wonder, I mean, Joe Brady would not have been behind Stefon Diggs leaving, but it's probably a factor in the decision that was probably ultimately Brandon Bean's, which is, do I really want another year of this shit? Because I think like Mitch Morse, I was surprised, probably, and we may speak about the dead money, but I was surprised, but it, to me, it was a year early. I think Diggs at most would have played one more year. So they've made a decision to bite the bullet now, swallow the dead money, actually more dead money than there would have been if he'd stayed. But he's off the books at the end of this year. So you have an eat it year. You draft a couple, let's hope, wide receivers, and then you're good. So long as it increases the pressure on the receivers to land. But you feel that this is then going to be Brady's offense from now on.
Mm. And that's the good thing. That's almost the good thing about it. I mean, we get the $31 million dead cap this year. Yep. That's it. Doesn't roll over. It doesn't get spread out and all that.
The money
and
we've already paid, isn't it? It's the money you've already committed.
Then obviously Houston gets his contract and all that. And you're looking at what's on. Then I think we'll be about will save about 27 million on the cap and gain 27 million cap space next year because Diggs is not on the books. The downside, maybe you could have got better picks. But it's one of those, really.
It's also the compensation that you get. I don't mean compensatory picks. The return that you get from the picks is often quite a bit overstated. I'm going to quote someone I was reading, Ari Myroff, who pointed out earlier, the Chargers got a fourth round pick for Keenan Allen. Cowboys got fifth for Amari Cooper. You know, it's slightly, you know, he finished off by saying, you know, that's, you know, Bills got next year's second and they gave up this year's sixth and next year's fifth.
Mm.
It, bigger picture, again, I don't think that's not bad. And people who want to say, yeah, but that's next year's second round. Well, don't forget, that's now a chip in the great casino of moving up in the draft.
Mm. I think what's going to be interesting is how he goes for it, how it plays out in the draft. I mean, on his press conference, he said he's got the plan, he has the plan, and he has spoken to Josh. Obviously, didn't tell him that they were trading him, but they had discussions that there was trade talk. There was talk about Diggs going.
I'm going to stick my neck out and say, and I mean, I think like a lot of people, I really like Brandon Bean in so many ways. I think he's drafted overwhelmingly well. I think he runs the team. He moves people on at the right time. I think that was a lie. I think Josh did know, and he was going, but Bean is doing the Mourinho, and he's standing in front of everyone, and he's saying, have a go at me if you want, but don't have a go at the players.
Mm.
I think he's taken that, so Josh isn't going to get any heat. Because to be fair to Josh, he's had to take a lot of crap from Diggs and Diggs' associates over the last sort of, you know, various family members and team members and guys who know him and stuff over the past few years, and he's taken it with very good humour. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Josh didn't have a little smile to himself. not that he'd ever admit it, of course, he's too nice a guy. And he's too much of a good soldier. But I wouldn't be surprised if Josh was like, it was probably about the right time. I wonder if Josh said, now go get me a motherfucker in the first round and be leaving with me.
I mean, it's gonna be interesting. You've got that pick, you've got that pick sorted or in there. And then it's a case of trading up. Do you trade up? How far do you trade up? Where do you actually see it go?
Well, really good. Now, when we spoke to Ryan, I've been absolutely out of it, so apologies if I sound even more ignorant than usual. But I've been really out of it the last few weeks. I've switched one job, I've started another job, and the people from my old job, I still keep having to work for them through my new job. I'm a subcontractor now at my old job while still having to do my new job. So I'm all over the place at the moment. I'm a mess. But last time I remember, and you'll know more about this than me because you always do, there was pretty much three knockout wide receivers that are expected to go in the first 10 or 15.
MHG. Neighbours and Dunze.
Yeah. And then you've got still some really good, really good. I remember Ryan saying, you know, this is really good. You could have 10, 15, you know, top quality wide receivers that in another year could easily go late first round, early second, but might end up going third or fourth round just because there's just so much out there. So the question is, if you're going to move up, are you going to move up for, let's say, Adonai Mitchell, who is frequently mocked to 28, who seems to be in a sort of 20-something place? Do you do a sort of Kyrie Elam or a Dalton Kincaid, where you sort of maybe move up a couple of places so you because you want to get that guy? Or, and I think we should take this on head on now, do you think, right, let's get one of those top three?
Yeah. I just think it's what the compensation is going to be on there and how far they can get. I mean, you're looking
do you
on.
Do you want to have a couple of things that I read with Thomas DeLaus, who's given a couple of indicators using what's called the Rich Hill model. Yeah. I just read that as well, so I thought it was a funny thing. So I don't know if you've seen this before. For anyone who hasn't, it's quite interesting for anyone who hasn't seen it. So he's picked up a couple of teams. The one he zeroes in on is the Bears, because the Bears pick at 9, and they've only got 4 selections in the 2024 draft. So of all of the teams that are out there, they might be interested in trading back and picking up a couple of more. And he reckons, using this system, we give up our 28, of course. We give up our 128 and our 163 and the first round pick of next year to go to 9. Now, if you knew the guy you were going to get, you know, that's Ed Oliver, that's Josh Allen type territory.
Yeah.
To get to 9, that's who you're getting. I don't mind that. I don't hate that. If Brandon Bean feels really good about one of those three, and one of them may still be there at 9, maybe 2. Don't hate that for giving that up. 28, 128, and 163. You've still got 60, and next year's first round. But then, of course, you've got two rounds.
Yeah,
next year plus whatever compensation we might have.
The only issue, well, I wouldn't say it's an issue as such. I mean, obviously, you jump up to actually get the to give out next year's first round.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't know the way the season's going to pan out. That pick could end up being obviously a top 10, and obviously, the value for that would actually be a lot more. I mean, the only thing I was actually kind of thinking of is obviously they've got a couple of seconds next year and potentially 2/3 that keep the trade of a fourth, a fifth, a sixth first this year and maybe a second or a third or fourth next year, just push along a little bit more because we are in sort of a reset mode, but it could be a case that you could keep that first round and actually find that trade with multiple picks. I mean, in the next two drafts, we're going to have about 20, 22 odd picks in the next two drafts. So I think it's around that. It's about 20 picks. Right. So we've got the capital in there to try and for Bean to get a bit creative. I mean, I don't mind giving up the first for it, but if he can be a bit more creative, I would be happy to take that. I mean, yeah, Adunze is probably going to be the only one left at 9 because I can't see Arizona.
They'll both go in the top 8, you're saying?
Yeah. I can't see, unless Arizona trade down, which the only teams I can really see trading up are Minnesota to 4. Harrison won't get past the Giants at 6, right, in my opinion. Neighbors, possibly 6, depending on what the Chargers do. Chargers have been on weeping peg for a tackle. If they go with a wide receiver, then you're seeing Harrison, and they've lost both Mike Williams and Keenan Allen this offseason. So they're in the hunt for it. The Giants are one of actually will probably be in it as well. So there's your two. Top two, Neighbors and Harrison Jr. Then you've got the Falcons, who possibly, but they probably won't. You've got who have you got at 8? Titans at 7. They'll take tackle because they still got Jones, Hopkins, and AJ Brown. You've got the Falcons at 8. I think their wide receiver crew might be good, so they'll probably look defensive. Then you've got Chicago.
Yeah.
That's where, if anything, if you want Adunze, that's really where you've got a target, because Jets are 10.
Yeah.
And they may not need wide receiver. They could go wide receiver. The Jets are a team that are going to be the interesting ones on there, but you never know. Chicago may demand more, and they may want to pair Dunze with Williams, but they've got those wide receiver group already. So that is where you're really looking at, because I think Harrison and Neighbors are out unless they do some massive trade to actually get them. Adunze is probably the likely. I would even go halfway up and go mid-teens and actually try for Brian Thomas.
Well, you mentioned the Chargers there. Everything I just said with the capital, according to the Rich Hill model, we add our second round pick from next year, that might get us to 5. It might just be worth raising the question, if you're willing to give up that much to go to 9, it's only another second rounder to go to 5. Now, you know more than me. What's the difference between each of the three? Which of the three is more Billsy? Who's the boundary guy? The alpha, the WR one.
All three
could do it. They're all somewhat interchangeable.
Yeah, all three of them are predominantly outside threats. I mean, Harrison Jr. is pretty much your generational wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Think Megatron, think Randy Moss, that type, and obviously his dad himself. He's actually he's what, 6'3", 6'4", runs a sub-4.40. He's actually got decent hands, good route running. I mean, Neighbors is more of your over the top deep threat, but he's the same. Some people have Neighbors ahead of Harrison Jr.
All right.
But it's those two are definitely 1-2, and it's Adunze who's coming up late, but he's got the speed. He's got the ability. Let me get a scout report up. There we go. Yeah, he gives you the deep threat. He gives you great hands. The one thing about Adunze is he's got a safe pair of hands.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one that has done multiple trees. He's actually strong against the catch. And hopefully our guest, when he arrives, will actually be able to tell us a little bit more. And hopefully most of my stuff is actually right. He actually tracks the ball well. He actually is very good in against zone and actually has great body control. They're all your yak type threat guys.
Right.
And I think out of everything, I say Adunze would be my choice if we did go up to 9, because as I say, as much as Neighbors and Harrison Jr. are the dreams on there, I just feel as much as they want to go for it, it might be a little bit too much.
Mm.
Okay. But that's my opinion. Obviously, everyone has their own. Everyone wants him to sell the boat for him. But I'm happy with Adunze. I'm happy with Brian Thomas Jr. or pretty much Adonai Mitchell.
Yeah.
Both of those two are 6'2", 6'3", 4'3", speed. Brian Thomas is more the physical side of it. Obviously, Mitchell is more of your deep threat guy, but one guy I truly want, and he's going to be a late third round pick. People may have known this. I've probably said on social media a couple of times. Is Brendan Rice?
Another name.
Out of USC. Yes, he's Jerry Rice's son.
Yep.
He's Jerry Rice. He's 6'2", 6'3". 208 pounds, ran a 4.5 40, which, as I say, some of the guys like Puna Cooper Kupp, they were running the same sort, and look where they are. in this league. But with him, you've got a quarterback rating when targeted of over 120. He'd actually he's more of the yak guy, and he's just got, I've seen highlights of him, and you just see how natural he is with his route running, the way he actually drops his hips nicely. And when Caleb Williams was actually scrambling, he would actually track it. So he would do what most of our wide receivers do when Josh scrambles, try and find that open space, come back to him. And more enough than not, you actually see that on tape. You see him come back and actually make the grab. He's also one of those guys that is a natural with his hands. He actually high points the ball. He's actually a bit more stronger. And he actually has a bit of special teams to him.
Okay. So if you're perhaps betting against the Bills going all the way up into the top 10 and at most maybe pinching up a couple of places to get your Brian Thomas or get your Addie Mitchell, how does that work? Because let's tackle the next one, the fabled double dip, you know, whether the Bills maybe pick two wide receivers, do they go 1 and 2, 2 and 3 type thing. How does your Brendan Rice complement a Mitchell or a Thomas? Or does he?
No, they do complement each other quite well. I mean, obviously, you've got the height on both of them. You've got Rice, who's a little bit heavier. I don't like the word heavy. He's a little bit heavier.
But stockier.
Yeah, that's probably the right word. But they complement each other quite well.
Yeah.
The only way, obviously, is if they can get Bryce in the second or trade back to do it. Because in this press conference, Bean said that if they can't get hold of their wide receivers they coveted at that, and at 28, all their first round graded wide receivers are gone, they're going best player available.
Interesting. Do you think they know who their guy is at this
possibly, but that's what obviously says his press conference. Makes me think that it's either trade up to your guy or you're sticking and they're not going to trade down. So where you've got to find it is you've got to find the value in that wide receiver. I mean, Adonai Mitchell will probably be the better at that position if Brian Thomas doesn't fall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sold on Worthy. I'm not sold on Xavier Worthy. I can't. No, yeah. He's or Troy Franklin. I'm not sold on them just because of their, not because of their size. They're 6'2", and Worthy's 5'11", and they're pacey. It's just the build. 6'2", 176 pounds for Franklin. 5'11", 165 pounds for Worthy. Yes, they're speed guys, but it's just there's a lot of room for them to actually bulk up, and can they do that in an off-season and actually be out there and actually do all these contested catches and be stronger?
They seem a little slight, don't they? They seem a little, let's just say it, lightweight. I'm not sure the Bills really need that, do they? Don't we need a proper target if you're going to go to all the trouble?
We need a deep threat, but we also need someone that has a bit of bulk on them. And I know there's loads of people that are actually pegging for Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina.
What does he bring?
He brings, I think, DJ Metcalf.
Oh, okay. Well, he'd be all right. Anywhere like him.
But think DJ Metcalf, but 2 inches shorter. 6'1", 221 pounds, runs a 4.39. Sub 4.4 for a 222 pound wide receiver. And he's actually, he's got really good hands, like all of them, and is that deep threat that can actually get us there. I think people were high on him as a first round, but for some reason his stock dropped to a early, or excuse me, mid to early second round. It would be a case of going through that and actually seeing where they go from there.
Okay. So you said he was a couple of inches shorter. Roughly what does that make him then? What, 6'0", 6'?
6'1".
6'1". Okay. Well, doesn't seem too unreasonable for a wide receiver one.
Yeah. And I mean, there's so many. I mean, this is a draft of double dip. I mean, I would even triple dip.
Yeah.
I would even triple drip. Drip? Yeah. Because you've got so many talents. I mean, and different skill sets. I mean, people like Keon Coleman, obviously his testing dropped him quite a bit. A 4.61 for a 6'3", 213-pound wide receiver. But everyone says don't judge on the 40, judge on the playing.
Yeah,
so true. On field play in regards to it. And I mean, you also got the likes of Luke McCaffrey out of Rice. 6'2", 4.46, 40, but he was a cornerback that's only had a couple of years or a year and a bit at wide receiver, but can also do a bit of running back. So think Curtis Samuel.
Did you say cornerback?
Quarterback.
Well, quarterback, I was going to say, because normally cornerbacks are the people who tried to be wide receivers but couldn't. That was always my preferred position.
Yeah, but you've got someone like that who you think with Luke McCaffrey, think Curtis Samuel.
Okay. I think I wasn't even here. I don't think we even talked about Curtis Samuel yet. I'm not sure I was even here the last time we recorded something.
I don't know. Yeah, you were.
Was I? Well, yeah. We were on it when we signed it. I don't know if we actually went through it. I don't know if we actually really went through it. I don't know. We were there when we signed him, but I mean, like the impact, like what does he bring to the wide receiver room? How does that impact the draft? I think was what I was trying to say. What hole does he fill that means, okay, that's fine? Because the sense I'm getting with him and Shakir and other guy whose name escapes me is that they're all fine in the sort of wide receiver three-ish, but we seem to be a bit lacking in one and two.
He's your genuine, he's definitely your wide receiver two to start with, but he come in with more familiarity with Brady's Brady system, having worked with him in Carolina.
So he can be a two, you think? So
he'll be a two. He could be a one. But he's more of a two. He's actually you think sweep plays, you think jet sweeps, screen games, line him up in the backfield as a running back. He's that type of guy.
Okay.
I did have some stats on him and how he actually did, but they now just disappeared from my system. But he actually was, I think he was one of 3,000-yard wide receivers in Joe Brady's offense in 2020. But he brings a unique skill set. And okay. And I think it meshes well. I think what we've seen obviously with Diggs, he's got that ability, but then you're now looking at what we've got left. I mean, Shakir came on leaps and bounds.
He did.
In that season, and he is as savvy as Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
So you've got that in Shakir.
So we're almost back to my original point, is we need a proper MF then, don't we?
Yeah.
That's sort of what we're missing, just like the alpha, the bully, the contested catch guy, the speed guy, power guy, boundary guy.
That would be, in my opinion, if you do it, if you go in the first round, you either trade all the way up to 9 for Dunze, yeah. Or you actually take, or you trade up into teens to take Brian Thomas Jr.
Brian Thomas Jr. And we're the feeling is, I mean, players drop, don't they? But Jefferson did, didn't he? Justin Jefferson, because he killed us in that game a year or two back. I think he's fantastic, but he dropped to about 20 or so, didn't he? I seem to remember.
Yeah, I mean, there's even talk.
It can happen, but he's going to be 15 to 20, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, there's even talk going around on Twitter. Maybe they do that. That what do you call it? That trade for Jefferson.
That's not gonna, I don't see that happening because I mean he's only played what we lost in the 22 season.
No, he's coming into his fourth year.
Yeah, because they beat us in 21 season.
Yeah.
So he's 3 seasons down. Well, yeah.
But the trouble is, I think he wants big bucks on that contract.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I think the way Bean's setting it up and the way he's attacking it, you get 2 or 3 rookies.
Yeah.
And then you build from there. I mean, my prediction, you don't, as much as we say safety is a big need or a need, and so is defensive line, I could actually see wide receiver coming off first and second, double dip, first and second.
A first and second double dip, because they did it with
defensive end.
Did it with defensive end, Boogie and Rousseau.
And if that's the case, and they
go... Do you think double dip 1 and 2, or double dip maybe trade back for a 2 and 3 type thing, or do a...
It depends on their board at 28. If someone's desperate to come in and pick Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr. To get that fifth year on there, then you could probably see it drop down. But I could see if they stay, then they've got to hope that either one of their wide receivers they want's on the board, or if they haven't got a decent grade and they've got a low grade, round 2 grade, they actually stay where they are and pick the best player. Or maybe they do drop down. But the one name which I think is rising up the draft boards was another name of the guy I want to actually, I'd love the Bills to actually draft, is another Knight. There's another UCF.
Yeah.
Javon Barker. I think there's a video which I need to find on Twitter that I'll retweet of practice of him just doing a one-handed spin catch. So going into the end zone, catching up one-handed and did the spin and came down with it in the one hand. He is okay, he ran a 4.5, but he's actually he's a guy where he's come from Alabama, gone to UCF, and really a guy that is late second, but can develop.
Yeah.
He's got the deep threat ability. And he's got the yak. And I think that's the type of offense that McDermott and Bean want, and what they're actually looking at in this draft on the offense. They're looking at yak and explosive plays on the offense.
Where do you think he might go again? If he staying where the Bills are,
stay where the Bills are, and he'll probably go late second.
I see. So a candidate for 60 then, rather than 28. Oh,
got a candidate for 60.
So maybe you, if you can get, well, Brian Thomas isn't going to be there at 28, is he? I've seen a few mocks that take Addie Mitchell at 28, but again, there's a good chance he won't be either. You might have to give something up, but you want to hold on to 60 if you want to double dip your wide receivers.
Yeah.
Right, got you.
But I mean, you're looking at, I'm just trying to find, I thought I had it saved on my Twitter, but it may be on a different account. Like explosive plays, because obviously that's where you look at. You look at explosive plays, and there was a very good information section that someone put out. Yeah, there we go. Wide receiver draft class explosion score. So it's taking out like behind the line of scrimmage, short, intermediate, and deep threat, and their explosiveness on actually targets, yards per target. Where we look at Brendan Rice, his explosive score was 89.6 and was more effective in the intermediate range. He was actually averaging 12 yards per target. Deep threat, he was actually averaging 17 yards per target.
Okay.
And if I compare him, where has he gone? Where was he on that list? Compared to Marvin Harrison Jr., his explosive score was 87.5. He was actually, and his best attribute was his deep threat on Harrison Jr., where he was actually 24.92 yards per target on a deep ball. Everything else, he was under 10 yards per target. Yeah. So if you want explosive, that's a guy you've got to look for. Another guy, which hasn't been talked that much about, but has been mocked quite a bit, is Ladd McConkey.
Oh, I don't know. He's had meetings as well, hasn't he?
He's had meetings, yeah.
There's a few teams that are going to be on the phone, and you can request a certain number of in person, but still, he's on the radar, isn't he?
Yeah. Ladd McConkey, his explosive score was 91.3. He was averaging an intermediate route. He was averaging 17 yards per target. Deep, he was averaging 14.7 yards per target. I'm just trying to figure out if you want to, well, I would say guess who the actual, who the most explosive player is, but you would have no idea.
I'm probably going to be able to guess, or I'll be guessing for an awfully long time. So put me out of my misery.
It's actually Jermaine Burton out of Alabama.
I haven't even seen it. I've done a fair bit of mocking in the not for the past couple of weeks, but before then. But I've not seen that. I've not come across that name at all. What do we know about him?
He has a history of domestic violence, I believe.
as a victim or a perpetrator. That is important.
So he's off the board straight away. But the only other ones really on there, I mean, Rome Wilson. But he's a late second. Troy Franklin, Taj Washington of another South California guy, but he's 5'9". He's 5'9", sub 200, but he's explosive. I mean, on his deep threat, he actually averaged 39 yards per target. 39 yards per target on a deep threat.
That does seem like a lot. Is he one of those people that has an absolutely incredible highlight reel, but maybe goes missing at other times?
Yeah.
But, sounds like a lot of Gabe Davis, then, doesn't he?
But just before Ladd McConkey, you've got Neighbours and Adouzé. Neighbours with a 93.5 yard explosive score, averaging 12.65 yards on the intermediate target, on yards per target, and 21.5 on deep targets, yards per target. And Adunze 92.95, averaging slightly less, 11.8 yards per target on intermediate, and 15.9 on deep targets. So explosive plays, you're really looking at the likes of Brendan Rice, Ladd McConkey, Taj Washington, Troy Franklin, all that to actually get you where you need to be. So, but I mean, as I say, there's so many different varieties here. I mean, I'm looking at my list. If they're looking at intermediate route. So that's what, your 10 to 20s. I can't search this in order, which is not good. Because it's just a normal sign. You've got McConkey, Tejan Palmer of UAB. You've got Ricky Purcells of Florida. What's that? Dayton Wade of Ole Miss. Lawrence Keys, a third out of Tulane. And Malik Washington out of Virginia. Who are your guys? They're explosive with anything over 14 yards per target on the intermediate. And deep threat, you're looking at Jermaine Burton, Taj Washington, Troy Franklin, Malik Nabers, Tejan Palmer again, Jalen Polk, another 6'1 wide receiver out of Washington.
Oh, I've seen his
name.
Yeah.
Jaquan Jackson out of Tulane. Obviously Harrison Jr., Xavier Leggett. He was an 86 on the explosive score. He's 23.8 yards per target on deep, 12 yards per target on intermediate. Brian Thomas Jr., he was lower down on the list, but his deep target is 30.4 yards per target. And Marcus Rosemary Jack Saint of Georgia, they're the ones that have actually gone over 20 yards per target on deep balls. So you're looking
at... That's an embarrassment of riches, isn't it? You've got to think that the double dip is a real possibility. And like you say, perhaps even triple as well. You know, you got to think two of them will land. If you pick three, two of them will land.
Mm.
If you play your cards that way.
And as I say, it's what Beans really looked for with it. It's actually, he's looked for those type of plays. He's looked for the he wants to go now for the explosive. I mean, yeah, you've got Shakir on there who's done it. I mean, they're trying to replicate Davis.
Yeah.
They're trying to replicate Davis, but have the ability to be number one, the new number one like Diggs. So the ones that definitely will come in and start straight away at number one will probably be Adunze, Harrison Jr. and Neighbors. The others would need to develop, but this will be the making of Josh and actually show that it wasn't just Stephon Diggs that helped him be where he is now.
Yeah, I think it's a bit like, I think it was probably the right time. I remember when John Brown and Cole Beasley were really good signings for the Bills because they were just the right receivers that Josh probably needed at that point in his career when he was still developing as a passer. I think Diggs took him to the next level, but I think he's probably okay now. He just needs a couple more people to throw to, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Diggs was fading away right about the time that Brady started prioritizing other parts of the offense.
Yeah.
You bring a couple of guys in. You've still got that nice short passing game. You've still got the running game. You've still got the pass catching running game. You've got the tight end play. I think we maybe even get two. I thought maybe only get another year out of Dawson Knox, but maybe the way he sort of restructured the deal, taking the pay cut, he can probably get another couple of years out of him. I wonder if Josh had a word with him about that, because I know how close those two are.
Yeah.
What you have missed in Diggs, even if not in last year, is the big player. You know, who are the grade A players on the Bills, and they don't have as many as they used to. I would still rather go for a big name than two smaller ones. I would rather go for a week one starter now than a guy he'll be great in year two or year three. I think we need to make the most of what we have with Josh at the moment.
I think it doesn't look like, I guess, going to be on right now. So that's a bit of a shame, but hopefully we'll get him on.
Well, you seem to know what you're talking about, mate. So you were fine.
Well, I try to. But the good thing about this, and obviously it's good to see now that they noticed what they've actually what they're missing and actually look to rectify it. I mean, we're seeing a youth movement in there. We're seeing the big names go And for all they've done since they've been here, we've only really got to one championship game.
Yeah. I said it myself a few weeks ago. As great as Trey's been, as great as Mitch Morse has been, Poyer and Hyde, they didn't win us a Super Bowl, and they didn't even get us to a Super Bowl. What they've done is stopped us from being losers, made us divisional winners, made us playoff contenders. But now we maybe need some people to go a step further, and those people will be stepping into a winning organization. Mm. But we need to go a step further.
Yeah, I think you look at it, you're seeing that the new revolution's here. You saw what Joe Brady did with Brian Daboll's Ken Dorsey's offense.
Yeah,
he pretty much last year was Dorsey's offense for the whole season with a few Brady tweaks in there,
mm-hmm.
and that involved the last 6 weeks, including the playoffs. Less and less targeting of Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
So, and it shows that Josh can still be Josh. And I'm hearing all these narratives of the Super Bowl windows now closed for the Bills because they've got rid of Diggs. I've seen Jets fans, especially the UK and Irish Jets, actually piping up saying the AFC East now goes through the Jets. They're gonna pop up sooner rather than later.
You kind of need to win more than 8 games in a season before you can at least start the talk on the AFC running through the Meadowlands. I don't think so, not yet.
It's just interesting to see, and this is the evolvement that evolving that's the word, of what this team can be. I mean, you've got Josh tied down for another, 4 years?
At least, you've
got him till he's 30 at least. So you've got still 4 years of prime time Josh Allen. And you then if you double dip on these rookies, you'll have two rookies, one which will be on a 4-year contract, rookie contract, another one on 3. So you get minimum
if you get one in the first round.
Yeah. So in essence, you're getting a minimum of 3 years worth of cheap rookie contracts. So if we got a Brian Thomas Jr. or Roma Dunze and say a Brendan Rice or Javon Barker or Luke McCaffrey, and both of them, all of them develop on there, you've got 3 to 5 years of cheap rookies whilst Josh Allen's contract is eating up that cap space.
Sure.
So in essence, it's kind of come at the right time. I think they've decided to hit the reset button, but not a full blown, we're going to get rid of everyone to actually to do it. They did a slow, soft reset.
Yeah.
But obviously now they can mold how they want this team to be.
Yes.
And that's right. Going to be the interesting thing to have during this, during the off season, how it comes together and who we actually, who we draft.
And
I wouldn't be surprised if we triple dip. I mean, we've got now 10 picks now, 11 picks still. We had 12, now got 11. But there's still guys later on that they're not going to be studded. They're going to be more wide receiver depth and all that, but come in with their own little skill sets. I mean, they're going to be more undrafted or round 6 or 7, but we've got a small school, and one of our guests in the future will probably talk a bit about him, is Jalen Coker out of Holy Cross University.
I've never even heard of Holy Cross University. Where is it?
They are Division 3 team.
Okay.
So two divisions below, like the Alabamas, the USC.
You can't move between the divisions, though, can you? It's not. There's no promotional relegation.
You can play teams from other divisions.
Okay.
But you can also transfer. So you've got a transfer period in college football. So you can enter the
transfer. That's players moving, but the team can move between divisions, is my point.
No. No, no, they stay in their respective divisions unless you're in the FBC and you actually have money to actually move, because I think the Pac-12 went from 12 teams down to 2 teams. That's Washington and Oregon, I think.
It's slightly repetitive fixture list, isn't it? Two teams.
But they play in college, they arrange it, so it's not always going to be their division. They may have a few divisional games, but they could play anyone from any division. I mean, there's been games where Alabama have faced Division III schools.
Okay.
But with Coker, as I say, he's going to be a round 6, round 7 type guy. He's 6'1", 208 pounds. He's a deep threat guy. He's a deep threat. He's a 5'4", 5'40", but his deep threat and intermediate are top notch. He's a developmental guy, so he'll be fighting your Sir Justin Shorter, and Andy Isabella for the last spot. But there's so many. This is why this draft is good, because it's so varied in style. And varied that you can get talent at any position, even undrafted.
Yeah.
So, it's going to be an interesting one for sure. And we're delighted to bring on our guest, Ian Cummings from PFN. And we're joined on the show by Ian Cummings, draft analyst for PFN. Ian, thank you ever so much for joining me on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. We're into April now, so we're on the home stretch. Only a few more weeks, and we'll know where these prospects are going. You know, we've been speculating through the entire offseason. It's going to be nice to get some landing spots for sure.
Yes, and obviously, want to get your take. Obviously, just as an analyst, whether it be draft or not, about the big news that's come out of Buffalo, and that's the trade of Stephon Diggs to the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, reading the tea leaves ahead of the trade, it still looked like Stephon Diggs, even if he wasn't traded this offseason, you weren't sure how long he was going to be for Buffalo, you know, because it felt like there was some discontent on the surface late in the year last year. He kind of fell off a step in the playoffs and down the stretch. So you're looking at his age increasing as well and the cap details as well. It looked like they were going to have a transition plan in place at the very least. I think this just accelerates that timeline, right? We knew they were going to need a complementary threat. Now you're maybe looking at them double dipping at receiver in this class. Yeah. They have a few pieces. They got Khalil Shakir, who's a solid slot guy, wide receiver 3. I like the Curtis Samuel signing a lot. I think he's underrated, but I still think you need some bigger guys, some more versatile guys in that receiving core.
Yeah, I think, and we were saying on the me and Robin earlier that it's going to be interesting in the way they've actually done it, not just on the offense, but obviously defense as well. The guys they've released, obviously White, Poyer, Hyde, got rid of Mitch Morse and all that. They're all 30 plus. So we're looking at almost like a youth revolution, youth movement happening, obviously fitting to our two young defensive coordinators. So it's good, and it's good to see. And obviously, being a draft guy yourself, I don't know if you kind of remember if you had your draft notes on Shakir.
Yeah, I do remember, actually. I think it was an early day 3, maybe a top 100, fringe top 100 guy for me. But I loved the athleticism, you know. I think and I'm trying to remember what exactly I said. I think the route running ability and the route running upside, the building blocks, you know, the throttle control, the foot speed, the agility. I think all of those things were there. And then for a guy with a shorter catch radius, I really liked how he could extend beyond his frame and contort his body to make tough catches. I think that was kind of what sold me. You know, he's got slippery athleticism, and that translates in the rack phase too, but also just a nuanced fluid separator who can win out the slot pretty easy and make some tough catches. So I didn't expect him to be a premier weapon, but I think he's grown into what I was kind of hoping he'd become at his maximum in Buffalo, which at the very least is a really solid complementary threat. You need some more guys to take the pressure off him, but within that confined role, he can be very good.
I think looking at draft, I mean, everyone obviously just made note that it's probably the deepest wide receiver draft probably in God knows how long. Obviously, you've got the three guys where Harrison Jr., Neighbors, and Adunze. Do you envision now, obviously, with what the Bills got for Diggs and how that wide receiver looking, do you see them actually potentially going up? I mean, we've been speculating or talking about pick 9, the Bears' second pick, going up there. Do you see anything for there, or do you see for Adunze, or do you see them go maybe mid-teens for Brian Thomas Jr.?
Yeah, it's difficult because the farther up you go, the more expensive it's going to be, right? And if there's one of the four quarterbacks still on the board at that point too, which seems unlikely, right? But there's always a possibility. So yeah, on the off chance you're bidding with a QB needy team, that's going to drive the price up even more, right? So if you have to get into the top 9, because if the Bears are open to trading that pick down, you're going to have a lot of competitors between 9 yeah. and 20. What pick do they have? 28, right?
Yes, we have 28. Yeah,
so you're going to have a lot of potential competitors within that range. So you're going to have to sweeten the pot a lot if you're enticing the Bears to move down that far. So I think the more realistic outcome is to trade into the teens for Brian Thomas Jr. And you might, even then, you might have to trade as high as 14. Because I look at the Colts at 15. If they really like him, he fits their scheme as that vertical threat. You know, it would be tough to compel them. And it depends on who's on the board for the Colts too. Like if a corner is there, Terrion Arnold or Quinion Mitchell, I could easily see them making that pick. Or if Brock Bowers is there, right? It all depends on who else is on the board and yeah. where teams are willing to go. But I do think if you're the Bills, either way, you're going to have to give up a little bit of capital, right? Mm-hmm. And to be, you know, the good news is you got a second rounder from Houston in 2025. So you can add that in there and you can kind of shift that back and use that to get a wide receiver this year. So, you know, there are avenues for you. But if you want one of those top guys, you're probably going to have to trade up. If you sit at 28, A.D. Mitchell could fall to you. I know there's some effort concerns on tape. You know, can he go 100% all the time? But his athletic, even with his athletic profile, there's a chance he's not there too. So at 28, you're not really in the driver's seat. But the farther up you go, the more expensive it'll be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the draft, mock drafts and all that from analysts and all that have made us have a range of different wide receivers at 28. Obviously, Ladd McConkey, Xavier Worthy, obviously before the combine, you were looking at Troy Franklin and all that. I mean, as much as I know, obviously, I'm more of a rookie when it comes to scouting all that, but I've not been, as much as I'm high on Franklin and Worthy, I just feel, is their body composition, the fact they're less than 180 pounds really affect them going as a high or low first, early second, in a league where the cornerbacks are going to be a bit more physical?
Yeah, I think it does. And I think if you're the Bills in particular, right, like you've got Curtis Samuel, who he's pretty stocky for his size, but no one's mistaking him for a big-bodied guy who's going to win contested situations consistently, right? And then Khalil Shakir as well. You know, he's mainly that separator rack threat who, you know, he can make tough catches beyond his frame, but again, doesn't have the size to kind of outman guys, right? So I think for the Bills specifically, you may be looking at Worthy and Franklin and saying that's not the type of receiver we're looking for, right? And that's okay. I think Worthy and Franklin fit other teams very well in that range. Franklin is more of a top 64 guy for me. I wouldn't take him quite as high as round one. Xavier Worthy, I would take in that 20 to 30 range. I like him a lot. He's a generational speed threat who knows how to use that speed as a route runner. So that's the fun part of his game. But if you're the Bills, I'm looking at what they have in the receiving core. You did draft Justin Shorter. I don't have high hopes that he'll be anything more than a rotational guy at best, probably. I think you need a guy who has that combination of size and athleticism, I think. I think to a degree. I look at guys like Brian Thomas Jr. and A.D. Mitchell. I would love to have those players, right? And going farther down the board, Keon Coleman or Xavier Leggett, it depends on how you play the board, where you are. Yeah. But that's the kind of mold I'm looking for, just to get that contrasting skill set and help take pressure off other guys.
Yeah, and when you're scouting itself, and especially with like wide receivers and cornerbacks, obviously the combine's there and they do the 40s. Do you pay really close attention to the 40s, or do you actually do a go and just watch game speed rather than a 40-yard dash in a closed stadium with no no opposition, let's put it that way, by your mental, by the clock and all that.
Yeah,
it's a bit more time or more game than actually just a standard workout.
Yeah, it's a good question. The answer is both, honestly. You know, I think you do pay attention to the testing numbers. You do take it into account. But my saying is, and I stick to this, is you cross-check it with the film. Your end destination should always be the film. It should never be the combine, right? Like, oh, this guy ran a 4.4, so let's take him round one, right? Now, you see the testing numbers, right? You take note of them, you acknowledge them, and you formulate that athletic profile, right? It's safe to do those things, but you always want to cross-check it with the film to see if they apply it on a down-to-down basis, to see if they channel it, right? If they do, all right, check that box off. If they don't, why is that, right? Ricky Pearsall from Florida is a good example. This year, ran a 4.41, had, I think, a 40-inch vertical, right? He tested extremely well, and he's a very good player for sure. But I don't quite see that functional athleticism on tape as often as you would think with those tests, right? So you factor that into your evaluation, right? You know, is that something he can channel more, or does it just not play to that as often, right? With A.D. Mitchell, yeah, you can see it in spurts, but that's where the effort comes in, because there are times where he has a deep ball that he can track and get to, but he fades out sometimes, right? So you take those numbers and you cross-check them with the film and you apply it within that lens.
Yeah, I mean, the one guy that I've been looking at recently, just obviously me watching the highlights, going through it, and one guy I like, and I don't know if he can be that true bona fide number one over time, is obviously Brendan Rice, USC. I mean, obviously, yeah, he's got the name to live up to on there, but yeah. I've seen some of his highlights, and obviously the way he can actually separate, and obviously he comes back to the ball, high points the ball on there. I mean, is he someone that could eventually be an alpha, or is he more like that borderline 1-2 wide receiver?
Yeah, I think the route running needs to improve for me. The down to down operation. I think he's not the most flexible guy at stems. I don't know. I don't think he has elite hip flexibility and hip sync. And that shows up at times. At the Senior Bowl, it was kind of put under the microscope in some one-on-ones where he wasn't able to redirect and layer route cuts quite as quickly as other guys. And DBs were able to stick to him because of that. So I do think there are really good flashes of bend and curvilinear acceleration and blind spot awareness as a route runner on film. And also, I think playing with Caleb Williams, one thing he does really well, and I think it would translate well with Josh Allen on the scramble drill. He's great at coming back to the ball and making himself available for the quarterback, right? So that's important too. But his route running projection is a little uncertain for me. And then his hand technique can be a little iffy at times. I think in general, he's very good in contested situations. He can body guys. He's got the alpha mentality for sure. He's got the catch radius and the wingspan, but the hand technique isn't quite at the level where I'm going to say, yeah, I know he can make a living doing that without being an elite separator. I think, you know, right now I view him as more of a rotational spark plug with some vertical ability, probably confined to a big bodied wide receiver 4. But I do think if he can keep refining that route running skill set, there is a chance for him to be a solid wide receiver 1 or 2. I don't know if he has the flexibility to sustain a ceiling like a Thomas or a Mitchell. Yeah. But he's more of a day 3 guy for me, but he could be a value deal there.
Yeah. No, that's obviously great. Obviously, the difference, obviously, and nice to get guys, obviously draft guys coming on here to actually probably talk through a lot more in depth about it. But no, I think there's a lot of options really for the Bills. I think I'm just trying to figure out, which one is more Stephon Diggs like with a bit of height in this draft.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough question for sure. A.D. Mitchell, and you know, in a dream reality, like A.D. Mitchell comes to the Bills and doesn't end up having those effort concerns, right? You know, it's something you have to take into account. But we won't act like it's something that was a liability for him at the college level either. No, he had really good production this year, right? And I think part of it too was he didn't have great chemistry with Quinn Ewers early on coming from Georgia, and it took him a little bit to get that. So, you know, there are things that you won't penalize him for, but it's just there are a few reps where, yeah, he does die out a little bit. So you're wondering about that. But you mentioned the Stephon Diggs profile. Another guy who fits that really well, you mentioned him earlier, Ladd McConkey. around 6 foot, 185. Really good separator, foot speed, twitch, agility, throttle control. The dude is the term I like to use. He's a turbocharged technician because he's got that athleticism. You know, he ran in the 4.3s and it's verifiable on tape, that vertical speed. But he's an absolute technician, man. I mean, he knows how to manipulate DBs into optimal looks and then capitalize. So big fan of what he has to offer. Round one would maybe be a tiny bit rich for me, but at the same time, when he has the testing and he has the technical ability, I can see it and I can get behind it.
He's one of those guys that I think most people have said, obviously, say, oh, he's a straight up mainly playing the slot guy, but isn't he a guy that can play both positions, really?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's played on the boundary in the slot, and he can go in motions and scheme touches too. So I think there's a lot of versatility with a guy like that.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, that's one guy that they really have been looking at. And obviously, I think I saw a little clip from he was on the Kay Adams show. They were talking about it, and he's actually saying, "Yeah, I've had talks. I'd like to play with Josh and all that." So maybe the Bills actually do think about it, but. It's interesting. I mean, are there any guys like late round guys that you feel okay? They won't become round ones, but you can get solidify them as a number two or a number three.
Late round guys that could be a number two or number three. That's difficult because the projection is always interesting. Oh. I'm trying to think of guys who might fit that profile because you're looking for size speed guys usually, right? You know, that's kind of what you're trying to bank on day three. If you are going for that, Cornelius Johnson from Michigan, really deep sleeper for me, but 6'3", over 200. He's got 4.4 speed and it shows up a lot. I don't think that Michigan offense showcased all that he could do as a route runner. I think he's got really good flexibility, throttle control, really good cutting ability and angle freedom on stems. He's got really good sync for his size too. The hand consistency, I think, is the biggest thing for him. He does have some drops on tape. His hands are a little too wide sometimes. So I think the biggest thing is, can he do it on a down-to-down basis? But the physical tools are there. I think the upside is there. I think he can become that kind of player. And then another I'll throw out there, Holy Cross, Jalen Coker is a fun one. I think he's 6'2", I want to say, around there, over 200. Yeah. A really explosive athlete in the short and intermediate ranges. Doesn't have elite vertical speed, but solid route runner, really good hinge flexibility. He can stop on a dime and cut 90-degree angles on his stems, and then he's got really strong hands too. Very, very natural, extending beyond his frame, making those tough catches. So I think a lot of the translatable route running building blocks are there for such an explosive guy with such good play strength. And then you're looking at a really solid catch guy. You know, he can convert in clutch situations too. So I think those two guys kind of stand out on my board as players who fit that size, athleticism profile, and also have the route running building blocks to become more than just that vertical seam threat.
Yeah. And one other name that I've obviously is another guy with lineage in the from the NFL, obviously Luke McCaffrey.
Yeah,
I mean, I'd say he's definitely your developmental guy, but a guy that can almost do it all, put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. And he kind of fits that, you know, I hate to throw around the Puka profile, right? But Puka, you know, how did he win last year? It was, I think, alignment, versatility, flexibility as a route runner, strong hands. I think Luke McCaffrey has some elements of that to his game, being around 6'1", 6'2", over 200, right? Really smooth athlete with that flexibility to, you know, take touches from a multitude of alignments off motions in the slot and the boundary, good vertical speed, right? Good body control. But also I think just the ability to sit in zones and having that spatial awareness to create space for yourself at the catch point. He's got that too.
Yeah.
So I like him as a day three guy. I think early day three is probably where he'll go because he tested well enough. He's a former QB. He was productive. He checks a lot of boxes. So I think you got to get him at a certain point, but he can be a really nice component for your offense.
And I know Brandon Bean McDermott in the press conferences have told how they want this offense to do, obviously being the yak rack and explosive plays of the probably the let's call them attainable or realistic players. I'll probably rule out Harrison Jr. and Neighbors because I think it'll just be cost too much to get up to above the Chargers or the Giants for him. What type of players really would fit that explosive plays? I mean, obviously looking at probably Javon Baker, possibly Jalen Polk.
Yeah, so explosive and then rack. Those were the things you mentioned, right?
Yeah.
Explosion and rack. There's a caveat here because Malachi Corley fits those to a T for sure from Western Kentucky, but I don't know if he's the separator that they would want. I think you want a guy who can demand more attention as a separator because he doesn't put a ton of pressure on defenses right now as a route runner. He's mainly just kind of a running back playing wide receiver. You scheme him touches, but no, isn't the most variable player. So I'll put him to the side for now. I think the Bills should get a guy who has more gravity as that route runner. But yeah, I think Jalen Polk from Washington is definitely at the top of the list. He's another one who kind of fits that Puka profile, right? 6'1", 203, 32-inch arms, really fluid alignment, versatile player, really has a solid route tree. There are a few routes where he can improve his plant and drive technique, particularly on hitches and comebacks. But I think on crossing routes, on slants, double moves as well, really fluid hips, man. He can stack transitions just like that. And then one thing that I love about his profile is that he doesn't have elite vertical speed, but he's very explosive. He can accelerate and get to his top speed in a pinch, and then he knows how to use that and throttle up to kind of lull DBs into a false sense of security and then separate late in reps, and then he's got very strong hands at the catch point too. This dude converts. He converts time and time again. So I'm a big fan of him. He's actually my wide receiver 7, top 35 player for me, so I'd be a big fan of him if the Bills decided to, you know, trade down into early round 2 and get him there, right? Or, you know, honestly, I'd be fine if they took him round 1. I know that's a little rich for some people, but I like his profile a lot. I think he can be a solid player for sure. Explosion and rack. Xavier Legette definitely fits that as well. 6'1", 220, 4.39 speed, I think 40-inch vertical, right? So the athleticism definitely shows up. And there was one play in the season where I think he hit 23 miles an hour when he had a runway. So when he has a full head of steam, man, he gets going. It's fun to watch. But and he's got a wide catch radius too, really good contortionist beyond his frame. The contested catchability is there. But I was really impressed on my second watch through I was really impressed with his route running upside. I think he's a guy, again, who can use that bend and curvilinear acceleration to manipulate spatial relationships while stemming with his speed. And that can put DBs in a really tough position. But then also he's got the stride retraction ability to press into stems and then cut back and divert and really just halt his momentum. He's still improving on a few routes again, and his hands occasionally can be a little too wide at the catch point. But if you want explosiveness, rack, and a guy who can legitimately become a wide receiver 1 in an NFL offense, I think he's definitely got that. His size speed combination, just purely that, reminds me of, this goes back a bit, but David Boston, who went in round 1 in the early 2000s, and he was an all-pro with the Cardinals for 1 year. I think Xavier Legette has that kind of dominant upside if he can reach his peak. So those are a couple ones that come to mind for me. I do think Keon Coleman fits that role, you know, being 6'4", over 210. His route running, I think, is underappreciated sometimes. I still think he's growing there, but he's very twitchy off releases. He does have really good short area energy for his size. And then at stems, he's shown that he can use footwork and targeted physicality in tandem to separate and kind of offset DBs. And then again, he's an alpha at the catch point. We all know that. We know he's a really good rack threat with his contact balance and his agility and his explosion too. You know, he's not that vertical threat, which is 4.61 40-yard dash show, but I do think he has enough build-up speed to threaten teams. And then in the short and intermediate ranges, he's such a tough, hard-nosed player with that separation upside. I do think there's a lot to bank on there. So those are a few that file in that category, and there's others too. I could go down the list. I think, you know, there's a few guys who are kind of more utility wide receivers, like Jermaine Burton, Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall again. You got guys like Troy Franklin again, who's explosive. He's got that rack a little bit lighter, right? So you wonder if he can hold up at the next level. And his hands can be a little inconsistent. But I mean, this receiver class is kind of a pick your flavor. And you mentioned Javon Baker from UCF as well. I want to mention him too, because the thing with him, I don't know how well his vertical speed is going to translate against NFL athletes, because he's not great at stacking guys consistently. I think he has the route running ability and the explosion for sure, but he definitely maxes out earlier than other guys, and that shows up on tape sometimes. Really good extending beyond his frame and getting his hand in the cookie jar, so to speak, right? But you worry if his vertical speed doesn't translate quite as well, he might have to rely on that to a fault at the next level, and that might limit his upside. But he's a very good route runner. He's a very tough player. Again, good blocker too. So I think with a lot of these guys, you've got varying degrees of utility. You just got to sift through it and find the best one for you.
Yeah. And but the last one before we go, I just want to know, out of the guys that we haven't mentioned so far, who are one or two guys that you like, and or one guy that you like that we haven't mentioned, and one guy that you like that you think could fit the Bills profile in that wide receiver room?
I'm trying to think here because I mentioned a lot of guys. I got him. One guy that I haven't mentioned who I like a lot, Jalen McMillan from Washington. I think he gets slept on sometimes because he was injured for part of 2023. But he's a very good receiver. I think we forget how good he is, and he's got vertical speed for sure. He can stress defenses vertically, and he confirmed that with, I think, a 40-yard dash somewhere around that range. So he's got speed, but he's very, very good as a route runner. One of the more nuanced route runners in the class. Really good in-breaking route tree, really good route flexibility. He can cut really tight angles at stems, really good foot speed, chopping ability, nuance, efficient movement. And he's got good hands too. He's got good hand technique, I should say. There are times when focus drops kind of get him when he's not quite as comfortable. When he wasn't playing at 100% in 2023, we saw that more often. But explosive vertical threat with great route running ability, he's got all of that. So if he can stay healthy, I think he can be a really good player for an NFL offense. And then a player who fits the Bills profile, who we haven't mentioned yet, I'll go big time deep sleeper, Tajon Palmer from UAB. Alabama Birmingham, around 6'2", over 200. Again, yeah. Really explosive mover. He's got jetpacks in his soles, man. Once he gets going, he can gain speed really quickly, very explosive in the rack phase when he has a lane. But then he's got that vertical speed too. He's got a great catch radius, and there are some bright flashes of throttle control, throttle modulation that suggests he could be something more at the next level. I think he's your round 5, round 6, round 7 dart throw if you have an extra pick in that range. But if you want to bank on the tools, man, he's got every building block that you need. So Tajon Palmer from UAB, I think he's a deep sleeper to keep an eye on.
Awesome. So, I mean, Ian, thank you ever so much for coming on, breaking down wide receivers that fit for the Bills, and obviously names to watch out for. Obviously, anyone listening, underneath when we post this out, just let us know what your favorite, who your favorite is, and who you want the Bills to see. And Ian, where can the guys find your work and find you?
Yeah, so you got my Twitter. I'm gonna keep calling it Twitter. I know it's X now. I'm gonna keep calling it Twitter. You can find my Twitter handle below. It's at @IC_draft. Any questions you have about 2024 NFL draft prospects, feel free to reach out to me. I'll try and be responsive. And then you can follow my content at Pro Football Network, at PFN365. We just released our latest PFN scouting podcast. It was me and my good friend Derek Tate talking NFL draft quarterbacks. So that was a fun one, and always enjoy that. But yeah, we got a few more weeks. We're going to have ranking updates on April 15th. We're going to have more scouting reports, and then we're going to have pre-draft and post-draft content through the weekend. So it's going to be fun. Appreciate you for having me on, Matt. It was a good time today.
That's all right. Thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully we'll get you on again soon, hopefully.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And we thank Ian there from PFN for joining us on the show and talking about wide receiver targets and wide receivers the Bills should look at. It's going to be a busy few weeks for the podcast. I mean, we're cramming in about 6 shows in literally just over 2.5 weeks. So you guys are going to get a lot of draft content from us. And next week we've got a special guest. We've got a guy that was drafted in the third round of the draft by the Bills, out of Ohio State, played cornerback, was the player of was the director of player personnel at Buffalo, drafted by Buffalo. We have Marlon Kerner.
Nice.
In. He played 95, drafted 95, played to 98, had a bit of serious neck injury. Serious injury that actually cost him playing for longer. But he should be joining us on the show next week, and we've got a few more after that. So we'll keep you covered. We keep you content and keep you engaged. And for Robin, for Matt, saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Anything about heart? You know anything about work? No. Huh? That's who we are. Bills on three. One, two, three.